I want you to imagine being part of a group of people in which there's a lot of division. Just the people overall, for some reason or another, are just seemingly always at odds with each other. And amongst them, there's some jealousy, and that jealousy, as it normally does, leads to some strife and to some bickering. And everybody in the group really just kind of seems to be looking out for themselves. And some of the people in the group have in their minds, at least, that they're way more important than everybody else. And they feel like what they have to offer is better than what anybody else has to offer. And some of the people openly participate in some things that make some of the other people really uncomfortable. And some of them are at such odds with each other that they can't even settle their own disputes. That doesn't really sound like a group that anybody would want to be a part of, that I can imagine. And it certainly doesn't sound like a church or a local congregation. But if you're familiar with the New Testament letter, 1 Corinthians, then you're kind of familiar with what I'm talking about, because these were just a few of the problems that they were experiencing. And I want to say a couple of things about the brethren in Corinth, because I think I have been pretty critical of them in the past, maybe overly critical of them. And I definitely know they've done some things, or they did some things, based on what's written to them. They were doing some things that were worthy of criticism, but I don't think I've given them enough credit based on their circumstances. And here's what I mean by their circumstances. When we see all of the problems that existed in that Corinth church, maybe sometimes we forget these were brand new Christians. These were first generation Christians. In other words, they didn't have years and years and years of Christian legacy running through their veins. These were the first Christians. And not only that, many of the Christians were comprised of Jews. And so Jews are now living under a law that's way different than the law that they had been living under. And for the most part, they've been called to live to even higher standard than what they were living under the old law. But not only do you have Jews learning to live under a new law, you've got some Gentiles. And of course, they had some really radical changes to make right, because many of them were pagans. They came out of worshiping idols and involved in even all kinds of immoral things, even though it was under the guise of religion. And so here you've got a group who had a lot of radical changes to make. And so you've got the Jews having to make some pretty radical changes, the Gentiles making some equally radical changes and different. And so those two were completely different, plus they're having to learn how to live together. And so, to me at least, when I think about everything that was going on, I'm not surprised that there were some growing pains, right? That's just maybe to be expected, that there would be some growing pains. And so as Paul writes this first letter to those in Corinth, he's not just exposing, he's not just saying, here are all your problems. I mean, it might be one thing to know your problems, but you got to know what to do about those problems, right? You got to know what's the root of these problems. What's causing these problems? How do we get beyond these problems? Because I think even they would recognize, this is probably not right. This is probably not the way Christianity is supposed to look. And so Paul writes to them. And I think the solution to all of their problems was for them to love one another. If you're thinking 1 Corinthians 13, you're right. You can go ahead and open your Bibles there. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Let me say something about where chapter 13 fits. It fits right in between 12 and 14. Right? That's deep. But that's a three-chapter section. And it's a three-chapter section that really Paul is talking about miraculous spiritual gifts, and that was one source of their problems. It wasn't their only source of problems, but it was one source of problems. And so chapter 13, the chapter of love, actually fits right into that discussion. He says there's something way more important than the gifts that you have. There's something way more important than you having this gift or you having this gift. Or even if there were some who didn't have particular gifts, love, he says, was more important. And so I know for a fact love was going to be the cure for the problems surrounding miraculous spiritual gifts. But I'm under the impression that when Paul talks about the love that they needed to have for each other, that wouldn't just fix the spiritual gift problems, that would really fix all of their problems. Love would, going back to those things that I mentioned in the beginning, love's gonna help them fix their jealousy problems and the strife that's coming from that. This superiority complex that they had, love was gonna fix all of that. And so, I think love, fixing all of that, shows us something really important. I'm glad we have 1 Corinthians 13. And I'm really glad we have it for a couple of different reasons. But one reason I'm glad we have it is because 1 Corinthians 13 shows us exactly how love behaves. And that becomes really important when we think about all of those one another passages. I mentioned this a month or so ago that occasionally on Sunday nights, I'm just going to pull out one of these one another passages because there are a lot of them, and what all of them describe, I think, is that we are, as a family, we're connected together and we're dependent on each other. And so here's one, love one another. And I pull love one another out as and say maybe it's the most important of all, because you realize it's mentioned way more than any of the others. And it's not to say the others aren't important, but love one another, those words appear 15 times in the New Testament. Love one another, that's probably important, right? If we can read it 15 times in the New Testament. And I think about what Jesus himself said in John chapter 13. Jesus said love would be the distinguishing characteristic, your love for one another. That's how people are going to know your disciples, if you love one another. That's John chapter 13. And then I think about some of those words that were read just a few moments ago from the epistles of John, where John says, if you don't love, you can't know God. In other words, you can't be in a relationship with a loving God if you are not a loving person. And he specifically talks about the love for brethren, the love for one another. And so when we think about what Jesus says about it being that distinguishing characteristic, when we think about the words of John, when we think about the 15 different times love one another is mentioned in the New Testament, what that says is that I really need to know what love looks like. I need to know how love behaves. And so that's why I'm glad that we have 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It's because it shows us what love looks like, how love behaves. And that's what I want us to do tonight. I want us to just think about how love behaves. Now, let's just read 1 Corinthians 13. We're not going to read the whole chapter. I'm just going to read Paul's definition of love. 1 Corinthians 13, beginning in verse 4. The text says that love is patient, love is kind and is not jealous, love does not brag and is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, if you counted those quickly in your head, you probably came up with 10 different things that love does. I'm not going to break down all 10 different things that love does. I think that would kind of be a lot to remember. I've narrowed it down to 3 things because I really think almost everything that Paul says here about how love behaves can kind of fit into 3 categories. But the first one, the first way that love behaves as Paul describes it is love is patient. Now, if you're reading from the old King James Version or maybe the New King James Version, you see that love suffers long. And I like that translation because it's more descriptive to me. Love suffers long. When I think about suffering long, I think about this idea of not giving up easily. I think about the idea that here we are in this relationship and we're not just going to give up. We're not just going to throw in the towel because things get a little bit difficult. And maybe we understand this concept of patience and long-suffering. Maybe we best understand it in the marriage relationship, right? I know Katie really understands the importance of patience and long-suffering in her marriage. I can firsthand testify she knows what that means, to suffer long. Really, I think everybody who's been married any length of time probably understands the importance of being patient. I think everybody probably understands the importance of long-suffering, because things are sometimes going to get difficult. You know, when I mentioned Jews and Gentiles coming together, that provided a little bit of a clash because they were coming from different places in life. And sometimes when a man and a woman choose to get married, they've come from different places in life. And they may be on the same page about a lot of things, but they're not necessarily on the same page about toilet seats and toothbrushes and toothpaste and, you know, all of those things. And so there's a recipe maybe for some clashing. I would imagine Cody and Macy are even really soon into their marriage. If they haven't already, they can let you know, but they probably already know something about having to be just a little bit patient or a little bit long-suffering, right? It happens pretty quick. We understand that, right? And so when we're thinking about being in a relationship where we have to be patient, where we have to endure, maybe the marriage relationship helps us see the importance of that. Because if we just drop the marriage, every time there was a little bit of a difficulty, every time it was going to cause me an inconvenience, every time they did something I don't like, every time I was going to have to do something I didn't like, if we just dropped the marriage and moved on from it, there aren't any marriages that would last, right? And maybe we are seeing that kind of played out in our society right now, because marriage is not highly esteemed. And I know that because it seems as if marriages are falling apart just because there are some difficulties. Now, that's not the way it's supposed to be. There's a real absence of long-suffering. There's a real absence of people willing to stick out even through the difficulties. And so we understand it in the marriage relationship. We would understand it in our friendships. You got friends, you don't just drop a friend just because a difficulty arises. And so we see clearly the importance of patience and long-suffering in our relationships. Think about, though, our spiritual relationships. Think about this family that surrounds us right now. If it's important for us to be long-suffering in all of our other relationships, how much more important is it that we're long-suffering in our spiritual relationships? You know, just like those in Corinth, just like a couple that gets married, we come into this family and we've got some differences, right? We may have some different backgrounds. We may have some different ideas about how things are supposed to work. We may have some different influences throughout our lives. So we understand that there are going to be differences in a local congregation. And I think when we have differences, we bring in the possibility of difficulty, right? Differences bring in the possibility of difficulty. And so as a church, just like in a marriage, just like in any other relationship, we cannot expect that this relationship is going to be free from difficulty. Let me say that again. We cannot expect this relationship to be free from difficulty. But what we are expected to do is navigate through the difficulties in the right way. Do we get that? We're not going to be free from difficulties, but we're not free from handling them the right way. And that's the idea of loving one another and love behaving in a patient way. I think about in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, Paul again, the author, writing to another group of Christians, and Paul says, here are some other real life applications to this. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 14, Paul there says, "We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak." Now, what Paul has just said is in any given group, even the group there in Thessalonica, there are going to be some who are struggling. That means they are going to need our attention. And some of them may just be having a weakness in their faith. Some of them may be in outright sin. But notice what Paul says. Notice the last phrase of that. Be patient with everyone. Those who are testing you, those who are requiring efforts, those who are requiring attention. Paul says, be patient with everyone, the weak ones, the ones who are sinful. And now he's not saying you overlook blatant sin. But what he is saying is in the real world, in real life situations, there are going to be people who put us to the test sometimes for different reasons. And he says you need to be patient with all of those. And so I mentioned, I kind of lumped some of these together, thinking about some of the other language in the text here. Love doesn't get angry. Some of your translations may say, isn't easily provoked or doesn't act unbecomingly. Love endures all things. Again, there's that idea of us hanging in there even when things are difficult. Love bears all things. I think that was the first one another passage that I taught a month or so ago. We bear one another's burdens. In other words, we recognize somebody's in a difficult situation. I'm not keeping my distance. I'm willing to get my hands dirty. I'm willing to get in there and shoulder the load. And so I think that probably goes under the idea of patience. And then he says in verse 7, believes all things. Love believes all things. And I have interpreted that, or at least I understand that to mean, that love gives the benefit of the doubt. Love assumes the best. And as I think about that, I think maybe sometimes that's where strife really begins. That's where strife kind of starts, is somebody has done something and whatever it is, we don't like it, and maybe we start with the wrong assumption. Like we assume they did that to hurt me. They did that because they know I don't like it. I think that's where strife starts. Can you see that? We just make the wrong assumption about somebody's motives. And I see this a lot in my own life. I think about being in the car pickup line at school. Some of you probably have experienced this before. But I'm just convinced somebody has been placed there to test my patience. Because when the line moves up, they don't move up as far as they can. Or they're really slow about moving up. Or I go through a drive-through line and people get to the speaker to order and they have no idea what they want. And that blows my mind. How could you not know what you want? Or maybe they order a whole bunch of food and I'm wondering, why didn't you just go inside? Or maybe the Walmart parking lot. And I'm trying to get up and down the aisle and somebody's walking right in the middle of the aisle. And I can't go to their right, I can't go to their left, and they're just oblivious. But you know what I assume in every one of those situations? I assume they're just trying to annoy me. I assume this person is trying to ruin my day. And you know what? They have no idea I even exist. I have never even been a thought in their mind. But you see, you're understanding my patience gets tested a lot, which means God is recognizing you need a lot of work on your patience. That's how patience comes. It comes through the trials, right? And so I think God's trying to tell me something. You need to work on your patience. But do you see how we start with the wrong assumption? And when we start with the wrong assumption, it just kind of goes downhill from there. And so as we're thinking about how love behaves, we've got to be willing to assume the best when it comes to others. And so the fact that Paul says love is patient implies that there are going to be some difficulties. And what all of these other words and these other phrases in the text suggest is that when difficulty comes my way, it's not my right to get angry. It's not my right to act in some unbecoming way. Rather, what he says is when things get hard, love acts to bring us under control. Instead of lashing out at one another, love actually brings us back in. And it brings us under control. And it prepares us to work through the difficulty. That's what patience does. And let me tell you, we read in 1 Thessalonians 5 some real life applications of that, because there are going to be times where there are people around us that are testing us in some way. And generally, when we think about what's testing us, I know there are things that test us, but a lot of times it's other people. But let me share with you something that I think is a very almost immediate application. This is something Paul didn't write about. Paul never wrote about coming out of a pandemic and what that's going to look like. But that's something that we are staring in the face of right now. And I'm glad because we've been, really, I think this weekend marks a year of things kind of closing down. And now, a year later, here we sit with still some protocol, obviously. However, things are kind of looking up, right? There's a return to normalcy in some way. Vaccinations are getting out there seemingly pretty quick, and they seem to be pretty effective, and the numbers are coming down. And so there's a lot of positive thinking right now, and I'm thankful for that because we haven't had a lot of that. But let me just share with you some things that are going to test us as a congregation. You know, part of this vaccination and numbers coming down is going to mean that maybe the government one day soon is going to say the mask can come off. And I wonder, what's that going to look like in the local congregation? What's that going to look like here? And I'm not standing here telling you I know what it should look like, because I don't know. But here's what I do know. We're not all going to agree on what that should look like. Do you believe me? We're not all going to agree on protocol moving forward. And what that means is that Jim and Tim are going to have a decision placed squarely on them. And knowing both of them, what little I know both of them, in my limited experience, I can already say I think both of them are pretty wise. And they're both smart enough to figure out whatever we decide, somebody's not going to like it. Now, just put yourself in that position. Because it doesn't matter what they decide, somebody's not going to like it. So what do we do? What does love teach us about how we respond when something doesn't go our way? How does love behave when we're in this position that I don't like? Well, I will tell you how love behaves. Love behaves with patience. Love says, even if it doesn't go my way, I don't get to act out in anger. And I don't get to make their life harder and cause them more sleepless nights because they've been confronted with this impossible decision. Love does not allow us to do that. And love does not allow us to just rebel and say, I'm done because things didn't go my way. And love does not allow us to be at conflict with each other over something like that. Now that's a real world example that we're about to be confronted with. But what we have to understand is it's love that's going to help us navigate through the difficult times. And that's what Paul was saying. Here's a church in Corinth navigating through some difficult times. And if you want to know what love looks like or an absence of love looks like, just read the letter. And we've already admitted that's not a group I want to be a part of. And so as we think about how love behaves, love is patient. Love is also kind. And it's been observed that these two are kind of different in that one of them is very passive and the other one is very active. Like, for instance, patience implies that we're holding back. We're holding something in, right? I mean, I can almost see patience as being this idea of there's some stuff going on here that I don't really like. Again, not sin, but there's some stuff going on here that I don't really like, and I'm just going to bite my tongue, which is good advice sometimes, right? I don't like it. What's the best thing to do? Just keep it to myself. But that's kind of what patience does sometimes, right? Patience just endures with things. But love is way more than just holding back. And that's implied by kind. Love actively does good things for other people. So just think about this, the anger that we just talked about. If anger tears apart, what does kindness do? If anger tears apart, what does kindness do? I want you to just think about want you to think about the kindest person you know. And not your mom or your dad or your grandma or your husband or wife. In the church. I want you to think about the kindest person you know. How hard do you think it would be to get really mad at them and stay really mad at them? Do you think that would be difficult to get really mad at a kind person and stay mad at them? Because I've got a person in mind that has this really long history of kindness towards me. And I think it'd be really hard for him to get me angry at him, for sure. And even if I did get angry, I feel like I'd want to get over it pretty quickly. And I think that's what kindness does. Kindness builds relationships. Kindness builds relationships. Do you believe that? That kindness builds good relationships? I do. If you don't agree with that, I'd love to hear your argument. But I am convinced that kindness builds good relationships. And you know what else I'm convinced of? I am convinced that good relationships are better at getting through difficulties. Do you believe that too? Because if you don't believe that, I want to hear your argument. Two things I think are irrefutable. Kindness builds good relationships, and good relationships are better at navigating through difficulties. And so as Paul is saying, here's how love behaves, there's no question why kindness would be in here. Yes, there are times where we need to actively hold ourselves in, but there's also a time for doing actively good things to build relationships. And so the way I see kindness here, kindness is something that has to exist all the time, right? It's like patience. We don't give them a day off and say, I don't need you today. And so kindness has to exist all the time, but I do think it becomes more imperative in those hard situations. I think it becomes more imperative when somebody is disagreeing with us. I think it becomes more imperative when something's just happened that I don't like. And maybe somebody is not acting in love, and maybe they're lashing out at me, and maybe they're acting towards me in some unbecoming way. That's when kindness, I think, becomes even more imperative. Because even if you're really, really ugly to me, I'm still obligated to be kind. Even if you have disregarded my personal feelings, if you've disregarded everything that love says, even if you've done that, I'm still obligated to be kind. And so, I see kindness really here in two ways. I see kindness as a preventative attitude, where when we are actively kind to each other, and that may just be kind words, it may be kind deeds, a combination of both, but when we're actively kind to each other, that's a preventative measure, right? And then it's also the remedy. When somebody else, you think about the Proverbs that say a soft answer turns away wrath. Think about how that works in the relationship when maybe somebody's not being kind, but you're able to respond in kindness. And so that's love. That's how it behaves as Paul describes it here. And then the third one is selfless. And I think really almost everything, even patience and kindness, could go under selfless. And almost everything else he says, I think, goes under selfless. Notice again the text, if it's still open there, where he says, love is not jealous, and it's not arrogant. It doesn't brag, doesn't seek its own, does not take into account a wrong suffered, doesn't rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. I think really all of that kind of falls under the category of selfless, because think about jealousy. Why does jealousy exist? Jealousy exists because there's something that you don't have, right? That's where jealousy begins, and so it's rooted in self, right? So there's jealousy. And then, of course, he mentions arrogance, and that's pretty easy because when someone is arrogant, that just means they have a high view of themselves, meaning I'm probably more important than the rest of these people. And then bragging, and what bragging does, bragging lets everybody else know how important you are. Bragging is just drawing attention to yourself so that everybody else is sure to know how great you are and how important you are. And then seeking its own, that's pretty self-explanatory, right? As to how that relates to being selfish. Because the person who is seeking his own is seeking his own best interest, not what's best for the other. And then there's keeping a list of wrongs. And I think that falls under selfish. Keeping a list of wrongs. And I think that falls under being selfish because when I'm keeping a list of wrongs that somebody has done towards me, you know what I'm really doing? I'm holding on to those so I can use them as a weapon in the future. That's what keeping the list of wrongs means. And again, maybe in our marriage relationships, sometimes that tends to come out right. Or at least there's the potential. Because we have a long history with each other. And I can remember the time you did that. And remember the time you did that. And remember the time you did that. And remember the time you did that. Let me just ask you this question. Think back to an argument you've had with your spouse. And you started bringing up a long list of things they've done in the past. Has it ever worked? How effective is it when we start reaching for that list? Probably not very effective, right? Our own experience tells us that's not an effective way to deal with people. And it's not going to be effective in the church either. Our memories sometimes are too good. When people have wronged us, when people have hurt us, when people have acted in some way that we don't like, for some reason, we can remember that as if it's the PIN number to our bank card. You know, we just won't forget that. But love doesn't act like that. Love is not allowing me to hold on to things that I can use as a weapon against you in the future. And of course, love rejoices with truth. And again, I think what that says is what I'm most concerned about is the right thing happening. And I'm more concerned about that than I'm concerned about myself. So that's how love behaves. And we understand this, that being selfish is completely counterproductive. Selfishness doesn't build relationships. Kindness does. But selfishness doesn't. It tears them apart. It separates us. It divides us. And so here's what we understand about love. Love is not about getting my way. Love is not about getting my way. And I want you to understand this. When we're talking about patience, and we're talking about being kind even to people who aren't kind to us, and we're talking about putting other people first, I'm not meaning that we have to become the punching bag and allow other people to just abuse us and take advantage of that. Because that's not what any of this means. And that's not to say that I can't have a disagreement with someone, or it's not to say that I may not have some disappointments about some way things go sometimes. But what love says is that we find a way to make something work. Because again, love is not all about me. It's not about what I get. It's not about the feelings that I get to experience. 1 Corinthians 13 is not talking about lovey-dovey romance. Now, we can make some applications, but that's not what this is. This is how people in the church have to live and act towards each other. And I think maybe why kindness is such a big deal. Why kindness is such a big thing? Because it takes the focus off of me and it actively allows me to focus on somebody else. And so the true mark of biblical love is not how it makes me feel. The true mark is what my love does for other people. That's the true love as described by the Bible. And so what love is going to do, love's going to prevent some problems. And then love is going to help us solve some problems if they do crop up. So as you think about love, being patient, kind, and selfless, this might not be the kind of love that you've always practiced. But it is the kind of love that God commands. And if this is the kind of love that God's command, I don't have the option to ignore it. If God says love has to be patient, kind, and selfless, then I don't have the choice to ignore it. And really, this is only the same kind of love that God has shown towards me. Right? Because if you're thinking that God has not been patient with you, you're wrong about that. And if you're somehow thinking that God has not been kind towards you, you're wrong about that. And if you are somehow thinking that everything God has done is for our good, then we'd be wrong about that too. And so God is not asking us to do anything that He has not perfectly demonstrated Himself. So, you may walk away from this sermon and the only thing you really need to do is kind of be re-inspired. And maybe you think about, you know what, maybe I could do a little bit more towards kindness, or maybe I could think of others a little bit more. You know, maybe I haven't been as patient as I need to be. And that may be the only thing that you need to resolve to do. And if that's the case, then I hope you'll do that. It may be, though, that you've got some pretty serious issues. And it may be that your relationship with God is in such a position that you don't need to just walk away tonight thinking about making some minor improvements. There may be some major things that you need to do. And I don't know what that would be. I don't know your situation. But if you're here tonight and in any way not right with God, maybe there's some confessions you need to be making. Maybe people need to be praying for you. Maybe you need to become a disciple for the first time. Maybe you need baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. But in any way, if you're not right with God, we want to help you. Why don't you come to the front as we stand and sing?